I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Aging is part of life, and many of us will find ourselves in the position of helping our parents through the aging process. Melanie Merriman has written a book about her experience helping her mother through the aging process. It's titled Holding the Net, Caring for My Mother on the Tightrope of Aging. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mindy. I'm thrilled to be here.
Okay, so explain what you mean by the tightrope of aging.
Okay. The tightrope of aging is a concept that sort of emerged for me as I was writing the book. And I think of it as that period between when an older person is living completely independently and the time when they're actually at the end of their life. And it can be of a very variable length, but it's a period that we rarely think about when there's a decline in physical and mental stamina. And sort of everyday tasks can become more of a struggle or even become very dangerous because the reflexes are weakening, eyesight may be weakening, all kinds of things are happening in terms of cognitive processing, even, and I'm not talking about dementia, but just slowing of cognitive processes. And all of that leads to this sometimes very slow but very persistent mental and physical decline.
Yeah. Now, after your father died, your mother was healthy and living independently. You recount a conversation you and your sister, Barbara, had with her about moving closer to one of you as she was getting older. And your mother's response was pretty typical, I think. She said she didn't think she'd move closer to either of you because she didn't want to be a burden. So nobody wants to be a burden. But the truth is, as we age, we do need supports.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say that was probably the hardest thing that we dealt with, was that my mother had said this for years and years and years. And she would say, I never want to live with anyone, either one of my girls. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at first I sort of took that like, Mom, that sounds terrible. And then she would say, no, it's just that I don't want to be a burden. You have your own lives now. I don't want you to have to give up anything in your own life. Mm-hmm. So her resistance to let us help was actually the biggest burden that we faced.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking as it, because I can see there'd be many, many parents who would feel that way. I don't want to be a burden. And maybe it's helpful when I'm thinking in my own experience, I have an uncle who doesn't have any children. And when he comes, he feels like he doesn't want to create any extra work. And you know, when my grandson was born, he's a little infant, and I think he felt like he was taking too much of my time and he was going to go home early. And I said, it's so nice to have an adult to sit at this table and talk to at dinner. And he went, oh, I'm helping? I'll stay.
Yeah.
So when you sometimes I think if you can let them know they're not a burden and maybe point out some of the things that they're actually contributing, that's helpful.
I think that's very, very helpful. And what I eventually said to my mother about moving closer to us is I said, Mom, you've always said you don't want to be a burden. The burden would be if you stay here. Mm-hmm. Because if you stay where you're living, she was on the west coast of Florida, and something happens to you, either Barbara or I, Barbara is my sister, we're going to have to drop our lives, get on an airplane, and come here to help you. That's much more of a burden than if you're living close to either one of us.
Now, although you and your sister live far away from your mother, Lenore, your was your friend's mother. She would contact you if she had concerns about your mother's health or well-being. And you write that without her insights, you never would have known about some of the issues that your mother was having. So how did you form this relationship with Lenore?
Well, my mother and Lenore became good friends. They were both living in the same condo community in Newport Richey, Florida. And both mother and Lenore were college graduates and really interested in books and ideas and that kind of thing. And my mother had a number of very intelligent friends. She was active in the American Association of University Women. But when she met Lenore, she sort of found a kindred soul. And so when I would visit my mother, when my father was still alive, Lenore would come for dinner or whatever. And I really liked Lenore as well. Again, we shared many things. So I can't say that we were close until my mother started to decline, but I knew her well, and she knew me. And so when my mother really started to decline, and the thing was, my mother would hide it from me.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So Lenore wrote me a letter, and she says, you know, this is happening, and I really think your mother needs to move closer to you. And I can't say that I was completely surprised, but I was just so puzzled, because when I would go to visit my mother, she would seem fine. And I called Lenore, and I talked to her, and she said, well, she rallies when you're around. And then when you leave, she's in her pajamas for 2 days, you know, kind of recovering. So that really, my mother and I were so close, that surprised me, that she was hiding things from me.
So I imagine then you recommend trying to foster a kind of relationship with someone in your parents' circle of friends, because they can give you a lot of insight that you might not have otherwise
had. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So throughout the book, you have to navigate when to step in and when to back off about making suggestions to your mother. So talk about that balancing act and how to maintain a good relationship with your parent while still being honest about what you think is best.
Well, I would say that this was particularly difficult for me. So on the one hand, there was my mother's resistance. She didn't really want help. She didn't think that she needed help. And I guess maybe that's not quite true. Maybe it was that she didn't want to think that she needed help. My sister would say, she never wants to be dependent on us or on anybody. Mm-hmm. And so she's convinced herself, in fact, that she's going to be okay on her own. But from my perspective, I had a lot of resistance as well to seeing my mother's decline. My mother was Swarthmore graduate, 1937. She was smart. She was logical. She sort of ran our family, you know, from her desk in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. She was the CEO, kind of. And it was very difficult for me to see her in the kind of decline that she was in. And what I mean by see is not that it was painful for me to see it, although it was. I literally couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
What I always saw were the things that she was still doing perfectly well on her own.
Yeah.
And so the issue of when to step in and how to step in, I always erred on the side of trying to preserve her autonomy. I knew how important her independence was to her, first of all. And secondly, I misjudged over and over and over again how much she really could handle on her own.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I think it was probably hard for your mom, as it many parents. I'm the parent. What do you mean telling me what to do?
Exactly.
I'm your mother, right?
Exactly. And, you know, she never really expressed it that way. But there are people who talk about parenting their parents. And I felt that way. I felt after a while that I needed to be like the parent. But I never felt comfortable in the role.
Mm.
And if you talk to elder care experts, they will tell you it's not a good model to sort of have in your head, because your parents never think of themselves as needing a parent.
Right.
Children haven't really earned the kind of autonomy that adults have earned. And so it's very difficult to parent an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a different paradigm.
Right. And patience is really a key in these situations. Think about your mother going back and forth about moving from Florida to assisted living near your sister. You'd think she'd agree to going, and then a few days later, she'd change her mind. Meanwhile, your anxiety about her welfare is growing. So how did you handle the situation, and what is your advice there?
Well, boy, advice. I will just say it really felt like this tug of war between my mother really trying to preserve both her independence, but also her cocoon-like situation, right? So she's really comfortable in her home, in her condo, and she knows exactly where the grocery store is. And she, I mean, imagine as your cognitive abilities and your physical abilities are declining, and again, ever so slightly, but enough so that she's not really comfortable driving to places she doesn't know anymore, et cetera. And now we're talking about moving to an entirely different community in a different state. Huge amount of fear.
Anxiety.
And anxiety. Huge. So that's driving her on the one side to kind of dig her heels in and say, I'm comfortable where I am, and I know how to take care of myself here, which was not true.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister and I, on the other hand, seeing that she's really in more and more a more and more unsafe situation. So it was like this tug of war where a win for either side really felt like a loss for everybody.
You write that for your mother, a move like this was not an adventure or a look to new horizons. It was filled with sadness and fear. And I imagine this is a common sentiment, you know, about change as we age. You know, you're used to, you kind of, you know, you're saying she kind of dig her heels in. So how do you help acknowledge the fear without appearing to dismiss it?
Well, that is, in the end, exactly what I did, is I would literally sit beside her as she cried and hold her hand and say, "Mom, I know this is scary. I know this is probably one of the hardest things you've ever done in your life. And you still need to do it. And we're going to help you. We've got your back. We're going to be there every step of the way." There really wasn't more that I could do. And to try and explain the emotional toll that that took on me, when I finally realized that I was going to have to be tough and hold the line, she backed out two or three times every single time I tried to find another way. Mm. I didn't want to make her do it.
Right.
I felt like the mean mommy, you know, who, again, back to the parenting, I felt like the mean mommy who was making her do something for her own good.
Mm-hmm.
And I could even remember how that felt as a child. And yet I knew that that's exactly what I had to do.
Now, your mother also had issues with depression and anxiety, and she did take medication that helped her. But it's not uncommon for people to develop depression as they age. So what are some of the signs that you need to be aware of?
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, let me just acknowledge that, you know, it is, as you said, it's very common for people depressed. And why not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at all the losses that they're piling up in their life. Just the loss of independence, often the loss of their car, the loss of their sense of self to
and
some
friends,
extent.
A lot of their friends
loss
are
of
dying.
Their friends are dying. Exactly. So I think the first thing to say is let's not think of that as unusual or, well, they should just try to buck up, you know, or whatever. I mean, it's very, very real. Does everybody need medication? Probably not. But things to look for are loss of appetite, not sleeping well.
2 days in your pajamas.
Yeah, 2 days in your pajamas. Exactly. Really, I think the main thing that brought it home for me was my mother stepping back from her normal activities. My mother was very social. She was involved in lots of different things. And it was when she started giving up things that had been the cornerstone and touchstone of her life. When her calendar, which always sat underneath the phone on the counter in the kitchen, went from having a couple of things every day to having a couple of things every week, that was a big change.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be different for each person, but when they begin to lose the joy of things that they've always participated in before, or if you find that they're really looking back more than they're looking forward, oh, I'm doing this next week or that next week, that's what we used to talk about on the phone. When she stopped talking about that and started talking about, oh, so-and-so moved or so-and-so died or whatever, again, that's a sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation this morning. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're talking with Melanie Merriman. Her book is Holding the Net, Caring for My Mother on the Tightrope of Aging. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Melanie Merriman. Her book is Holding the Net, Caring for My Mother on the Tightrope of Aging. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. When to give up driving is a question aging people must confront. And it's a difficult decision because it means giving up independence. You found an elegant way to address the issue and make sure it wasn't you suggesting that she give up driving. So explain what happened.
Well, I did, in fact, suggest it several times and was pretty roundly, rebuffed. And I completely understand. But what eventually happened, and I had a friend who kept telling me, you need to get you need to get a professional involved, somebody who is not you, to be the bad guy. And this is something I really recommend to families, whether you're discussing moving or the car or whatever. Reach out to professionals like a geriatric care manager. They're now called aging life care experts, or your family physician. So I kind of lucked out in that I had gone with my mother to a physician visit. It was very disorienting. I'm sitting in like the parent chair, you know, the way she did when I used to go to the pediatrician, and she's sitting there talking to the doctor. And this doctor, who had been her doctor for years, and my father's doctor as well, and I had met him before, he just focused all his attention on her in that meeting. But as the meeting's sort of drawing to an end, we're talking about her medication, and he's talking about using her medication, but to be careful if she's going to be driving. And all of a sudden, it was like this light bulb went off in my head, and I had no idea what he was going to say. I thought then, oh, my God, I should have prepped him ahead of time, but I didn't. So I got very lucky, and I just kind of sat on my hands and gathered myself to be dispassionate, and I said, gee, doctor, do you have any opinions about when it might be time for someone to stop driving? And he talked in the most kind and but yet impassioned way about the dangers of people driving when their reflexes are slow, and about stories he'd read in the paper about older people hitting the wrong pedal and going through the fronts of restaurants and all. And basically, my mother just said, oh, my gosh, maybe I should stop driving. And so I was just like, okay. And he went on and said a few things more. And she said, okay, I'm moving to North Carolina. I think we should just not take the car. And I was like so excited. Yeah. I know. In my head, I was already like composing that ad to the Auto Trader. That's what I read in the book. I was like, yes, let's get this thing sold.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion because, yeah, it sometimes coming from somebody like a doctor or, say, a professional, they're more willing to hear it, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the voice of a professional sometimes holds weight. I mean, who are you? You're just their kid, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think the other thing is that professionals deal with this all the time. So they have a little bit more of an idea about exactly how to have the conversation. And again, they can break bad news in a way that, it doesn't have as many emotional consequences for them as it does for you.
And so you're writing this book from the perspective of a child helping a parent through the aging process, but at some point we'll be the ones who are requiring assistance, something to keep in mind for when we begin to hear subtle hints about our own capabilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't tell you how this has got me thinking about my own future and that of my friends. And the interesting thing to me is that so many of my friends who are going through this now, it's one of the reasons I wrote the book. When I finally sort of lifted my head up from just being totally focused on my mother and started talking to people about it, I realized so many people I knew were going through some version of the same thing. So as they're going through it, they're thinking very differently about their own future. Now, are we all going to forget this when we when it actually becomes our time and we're comfortable in our own homes? But I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I know my husband and I don't have children, and so I really think about what our situation is going to be. And one of the things that I say to families is most people want to, quote unquote, age in place. Mm-hmm. If you want to age in place, then you need to get to a place where you can age safely, happily, comfortably before it's too late, basically.
Yeah, makes sense. So in preparing to move your mother, there were a number of steps that needed to be taken, making sure her finances would cover the cost of the facility, helping her downsize, etc. This took some organization and list making. Any recommendations on how to tackle this without making someone feel as though you're taking over?
Oh, boy. I think that's a really tough one. I will say in my case, my mother was pretty ready to have me take over. But one of the things that I did is that I always kept her involved. So, for example, I wanted to interview a couple of different moving companies. I made sure that she was involved in those interviews, and I tried really hard to get the moving company representative to talk to her and not to me. Mm-hmm. One of the things that happens as people get older, and particularly when the younger daughter or son is sitting there with them, whoever they're talking to about anything is going to tend to talk to the daughter and say,
right,
does she want this? Right. Does she want that? And I didn't do as good a job as I should have of saying, Mom,
what do you want?
Yeah. What do you want? Or you should ask her, mm-hmm, or whatever. So I think one of the things that we can do if we're in that situation is keep directing the person to talk directly to your parent. If the parent is non-responsive or wants help, they'll probably ask you for it. Or you can say, Mom, would you like me to handle that?
Mm-hmm. Makes them feel more in control.
And then again,
and power,
it
yeah,
gives them, and a number of times that's what I would do with my mother too, is I would say, okay, we're going to need to do this. Do you want to call Keith or do you want me to call him? That was, mm-hmm, her financial advisor. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she would say, no, I'll talk to him. And sometimes she would say, would you do that? Would, mm-hmm, you call the accountant? So I think just in the same way that you would with any other adult, you know, ask them, would, mm-hmm, you like for me to take this on for you? And that gives them some agency.
Right. Claudia in Falmouth writes, hi, a fellow person also having to take care of one of my parents. One element I also had to deal with is having to translate here on the Cape for my mother at all of her appointments. I struggled to find activities for my mother where she could be without me as the translator. I have to add, I'm a mom of two small children. Even though my mom didn't have as many physical challenges, she could still do most things by herself without worry. The language barrier outside the house was a huge thing to deal with.
Wow.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, I didn't have to deal with that. That's interesting to me. One of the things I would suggest to Claudia and to others who have sort of unique issues like that, if you go online and you just Google Area Agency on Aging, there's one in just about every community. It's a quasi-governmental organization. It's funded in part by governmental funds. And the Area Agency on Aging has access to all kinds of resources. So they can hook you up, for example, with different meal plans, mm-hmm, that meals that can be delivered, Meals on Wheels and others. And it may be that they could have helped Claudia, or could,
yeah,
help Claudia with a translator, a volunteer translator.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
Another thing we're going to talk about a little bit later, but I'll just mention it now, is also you can Google Village to Village, mm-hmm, movement, and you'll get the website for the Village to Village group, and see if there's a village. These are virtual villages, mm-hmm, basically, and they also provide the same kinds of services. There's a one, I don't know where Claudia lives, but
she's in Falmouth, yeah.
There's a wonderful one, yeah, in Falmouth.
Neighborhood Falmouth, yeah. And we are going to talk about that, so stay tuned for that. But
yeah,
now you were fortunate that your mother had the financial means to move into assisted living and to pay for home health aides as her health deteriorated. Not everyone, obviously, is in that position. So what do you think is important for people to realize about what is and what is not covered by Medicare, private insurance, or even long-term care insurance?
Well, probably the most important thing to realize is what Medicare does and doesn't cover. I think most people are astonished to find that Medicare does not cover home care, assisted living, anything of that sort, unless the person has just had a hospitalization. So Medicare has very limited home care benefits for people who are just out of the hospital, who either go to a rehab facility or go home. And then there are limits to a limited number of days that Medicare will pay for either rehabilitation or home care. Medicaid will pay for nursing home care. Again, not assisted living, but nursing home care. But being eligible for Medicaid is a very complex process. You have to have a certain limit to your assets, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I encourage anybody working with a parent or a friend or a relative who has limited means, absolutely explore the possibility of Medicaid. And that doesn't replace Medicare. Mm-hmm. You become what's called dual eligible. Mm-hmm. Absolutely look into that. Long-term care insurance is great. We're all facing this now in the future. I really think we all need to look into long-term care insurance, almost no matter what age we are, because that will pay for mm-hmm. home care. But in terms of government programs, almost nothing.
Yeah. Downsizing is something that typically happens as we age. And you write about packing up your mother's home, but doing it while she wasn't there so as not to upset her. And there are people who never throw anything away, which is a challenge. But your mother was someone who had gotten rid of things along the way, which presented another challenge. What was left were things that she cared about. So talk mm-hmm, about going exactly. through those items and advice for others when taking on this task.
Well, if you have one of those homes that just has, you know, not been cleaned out in a million years, I really recommend hiring somebody to help you, even if it's just a really good friend who will come over and help you. But there are companies that you can hire to help you go through things and clean them out. In my situation, as you said, my mom had been really good. In fact, she gave away a few things that I really would have liked to have. But the person who helped me with that was Lenore, her best friend. And when I got down to the things where I couldn't decide, and her books, right. we are a big book family, always have been. And it was so hard for me to decide. And Lenore said, look, go through the bookcase. Choose 5, maybe 10 books that you really, really want, and then the rest of them we're going to donate to the library. And so she kind of helped me to realize that I couldn't take everything. That being said, I still have a couple of boxes of her things now, 8 years later.
Yeah, that still
I've,
in boxes.
That
yeah.
I've never unpacked, yeah. that are in boxes, that I'm still going to have to go through. So I guess another thing I want to say is give yourself a break.
Yeah.
This is really, really hard. And if it takes, you know, if it takes putting a few things in your basement for a while, go ahead and do that.
Yeah. Now, your mother had concerns about leaving her friends in Florida and being lonely if she moved. But the opposite happened. Once she made the move to North Carolina, she became more engaged because the place she moved into had organized activities and it made it easy for residents to participate. This might be a hard sell to a parent, but it's good to keep in mind that when you're considering, you know, suggesting a move, that this could be a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a virtually impossible sell.
Yeah.
But I think that it's something for the children mm-hmm. to keep in mind, or the, you know, the younger person who's helping. Keep in mind that these new living arrangements, whether it's adult congregate living, which is actually my mother originally went to an independent apartment in adult congregate living. And that's where a lot of people start out. So it's an apartment. You get one, maybe two meals a day, but those meals are communal. And initially, you know, people sort of are not sure that that's what they want to do, but they really do promote socialization. My mother, in fact, because she wasn't driving well, and because most of her friends were younger than she was and were still out doing a million things that she couldn't do anymore, was very isolated in her condo at the end. And I think you'll find this is true for a lot of older people. They really do want to stay in their own homes, but they're not staying in the same lives mm-hmm. that they used to have. They're now contracting to a very small life in their little cocoon. So at least for the children, know that it's a little bit like going to college because everybody's new
right.
in the new place.
Right. Now, your mother had issues with falling, which can be common and dangerous. When elderly people fall, they're more likely to break a bone and it takes them longer to heal. This was a concern for you and your sister, but your mother wasn't too worried about it. How did you handle that?
Well, it was very interesting. You know, first of all, I want people to understand that falling is a real sign. The very first fall might be an accident. The second fall is a cause for concern. And the third fall is a call to action. if there are three falls over even a six-month period, that's a call to action, and you really need to see what's going on. Because as cognitive abilities start to go downhill, believe it or not, even if they're pretty strong physically, that will sometimes lead to falling. And if it's accompanied by weakening physically, it will lead to falling. So what actually happened with my mother was that she developed something that has a strange academic name, anosognosia. You can look it up. I wrote an article on it. She did not realize that she was impaired as she was. She literally couldn't process. She would say to me, I can walk fine. I just fall sometimes. Okay, that's just a nonsensical statement. So you really need to sort of navigate the fact that they may not think that the falling is a big deal. Particularly in my mother's case, she didn't get hurt. She'd feel herself falling and she'd just kind of drift and sit down to the floor. And then I had made her have one of those panic buttons. Mm-hmm. So she'd push it. Somebody would help her up. So it's really important to step in if there are falls, even if there are no injuries, because that is when there can be a broken hip, a broken shoulder. Then they end up in rehab, and that can really cause decline, both physically and mentally.
Doctors eventually suggested that your mother needed a pacemaker. And at this point, your mother was a bit confused, and it was really up to you and your sister to decide whether to go ahead with this procedure. So talk about your concerns and how you weighed the pros and cons of this procedure.
This was probably the hardest thing that I went through. My sister happened to be on vacation, and although my mother lived near my sister, our deal was whenever she needed a vacation, she went. I came up. I stayed in her house. I took care of my mom. So I was there when she had a big fall, ended up in the hospital, and the pacemaker was recommended. I reached out to friends and professionals in the hospice industry that I knew because I had worked in that industry. And tried to really understand what the pacemaker would mean for her. In the end, I made the decision to do it because I realized if we didn't do it, she was going to be exactly the same as she had been. And the cardiologist was giving me this little glimmer of hope that with the pacemaker, she might fall less because she might have more blood flow to the brain, uninterrupted blood flow to the brain. My sister was more realistic and had a lot less hope for it. And in the end, I think it really did not do her any good, although it didn't do her any harm. But I think the main thing, there's two things I want to say about this. If you have an elderly parent and you're facing a really difficult medical decision, you absolutely want a professional physician who is going to look at the entire circumstance, the entire situation with your family member, not just a cardiologist who wants to put in a pacemaker. That's what they do. That's what they're looking at. You need somebody who's going to look at the whole situation. Maybe that's your parent's primary care physician, but more often it's going to be a palliative care team. If you're in a hospital, ask if they have a palliative care team. If they don't, ask if there's one in the community and get a palliative care physician to come in and talk to your parent and yourself about the whole situation and how this one medical procedure, whatever it happens to be, fits into the overall goals for you and your
That's
parent.
Good advice. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking with Melanie Merriman. She's a former hospice consultant who wrote a book about caring for her mother, Holding the Net, Caring for My Mother on the Tightrope of Aging. And Melanie is calling us from Brewster. Hi, Melanie.
Braverman, I'm just calling because this is such a great program, and not because we share a first name. I'm tuning in a little late, so I don't know if you've already touched on this, and I apologize if you have. You know, things get very complicated when Alzheimer's or dementia come into the mix when caring for an elder parent.
Right.
And I just want to offer a local resource. We're the Alzheimer's Family Support Center, and we offer an array of free services for families on the Cape who are navigating Alzheimer's and dementia. And I just want to say there's a lot of people out there who need help. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if people have this particular complication in the caring for aging parents issue, there is help out there and it's free.
Yeah, Melanie, thanks for calling and reminding us of that. Yeah, that's Alzheimer's Family Support Center. You do great work and we appreciate that. Thanks, Melanie.
Thanks.
Another complication in caring for aging parents is that we often don't live in close proximity to one another. And we'll talk about strategies to cope with aging parents from a distance. But first, many seniors who don't have family close by and live independently can face, obviously, a host of challenges. Isolation is one of them. A frail senior can be at risk without supportive care, transportation options, and even social opportunities. WCAI's Catherine Iden has more on some local initiatives that aim to bridge these gaps by creating age-friendly communities.
So are you going to Bridge today?
Yes.
Did you ask if they got an extra?
No, I called so they wouldn't.
Eileen Cronin doesn't like to miss her regular Bridge meets. The 90-year-old Vineyard Haven resident loves the classic game and the chance to socialize a little with her friends.
Once you get in Bridge, you know, you get to 4 o'clock and you're in the middle of a game and so they say, well, do we have to stop?
She wouldn't be able to go so regularly, though, if it weren't for her driver, Marilyn Wortman. The pair met a couple of years ago when Wortman first began volunteering with Vineyard Village. It's a nonprofit that matches volunteers who provide services like rides, lighthouse work, and even companionship with seniors who need help.
I drove 301 miles the last 2 months and enjoyed it all.
Members pay for the service based on what they can afford. The program is modeled on one out of Boston called Beacon Hill Village, and there are hundreds of similar groups across the country, including several on the Cape and the South Coast. Nonprofits like Vineyard Village help fill gaps in care and services as people age, especially in rural areas like Martha's Vineyard. But some local officials realized more needs to be done to support seniors on both the town and the county level.
People want to age, live in their homes and be, you know, productive and healthy in their own homes as they, you know, proceed through the last quadrant of their life. And in order to do that, there needs to be a minimum of supportive environment and system around them.
That's Vera Harik, a project manager with Barnstable County Health and Human Services. She's also part of the county's Healthy Aging Cape Cod Initiative, a think tank of sorts comprised of experts from healthcare, local government, transportation, and other areas. They're looking at a variety of issues that affect people as they age. And for Harig, housing is number one.
The key economic thing that I see is this potential for competition for the affordable housing stock that exists between working age people and retirement age people.
Not only is housing expensive on the Cape, it's often hard to come by. 80% of the Cape's housing stock is single-family homes, and many of those are second or summer homes.
You want there to be affordable housing for people who are working and supporting the local economy. And at the same time, you want there to be affordable housing options for seniors who are on relatively low and or fixed incomes.
Harik doesn't have any solutions just yet. The think tank has just begun its work. In Yarmouth, officials have also begun to think about age-friendly communities, but they're taking a slightly different approach. Senior Services Director Kathy Bailey signed her town up to be part of the World Health Organization's Age-Friendly Communities Initiative. It's a 5-year program that helps communities envision how to be more inclusive and accessible for people from all stages of life.
Our view is the whole community belongs to all ages, and can our whole community access and be part of everything that's happening here? If the answer is no, then we haven't built Yarmouth the way we want to.
One way to build a better Yarmouth, Bailey says, is to take an intergenerational view when planning everything from new types of housing to finding ways to make the caregiving industry more attractive to potential workers. That way, a town like Yarmouth slowly becomes more integrated, ensuring it supports people at all stages of life.
The housing and the caregiving are linked, because how are you going to stay in your house without affordable caregiving? And on the flip side, how are you going to afford your house with the cost of caregiving? So those are the tensions. They are pressing right on one another.
Both Bailey and Barnstable County's Vera Harik agree creating a so-called age-friendly community isn't easy. It means changing mindsets and allocating resources in new ways. And making that happen could take years.
It's going to take some political will and a sense of communitarianism amongst the people on Cape Cod to really forthrightly address this problem of both affordable housing and aging.
Back on Martha's Vineyard, 90-year-old Eileen Cronin and volunteer Marilyn Wortman are thankful nonprofits like Vineyard Village can help while officials grapple with the bigger issues. The service has given them something they didn't expect when they joined up. Friendship.
From the very first day I met you, I loved you.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Aww.
For WCAI, I'm Catherine Ident.
So, Melanie, there are a number of community-based membership organizations, like we're just hearing, designed to help seniors continue to live independently at home. And that might be a good option, especially when a family isn't local. It gives you a little peace of mind that you know, your parents or parents are getting the support that they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I encourage everybody to look into the village-to-village movement, see if there's a village in your area. As you said, we have a wonderful one, Neighborhood Falmouth. Mm-hmm. Everyone is different. They're mm-hmm. very different models. Some are membership models. Some of them don't even provide services. They just get seniors together to talk about how they're going to manage their future, that kind of thing. But that, I think, is a really good place to see if, you know, if your parent is far away from you, see if there's a village that you can sign mm-hmm. them up for. Also, I really loved that Melanie called in about the Alzheimer's Family Support Center. We tend to think that we're the only ones who are going through this, and nobody really knows where to reach out mm-hmm. for help, which is why I often say start with that area agency on aging. Because there'll be one in whatever area your parent is living in, and they'll be able to connect you up with a lot of other resources.
We should mention, you provide a list of resources at the end of the book, which is great, because a lot of people, sometimes people just aren't even aware that it's out there. And, you know, if you're a caregiver of a parent who has dementia, Alzheimer's, or there's some other kind of really pressing physical issue, you are so overwhelmed with just the day-to-day that sometimes it's really hard to step back and go, hey, is there help out here somewhere?
Exactly.
And oftentimes there is. It's just we haven't had the opportunity to look for that.
Correct, yeah. Correct. And that list of resources, by the way, is also on my website, mm-hmm. which is melaniemerriman.com. And so you can find it there as well. And there are links to the Area Agency on Aging.
And finding companionship for an aging parent is also helpful. And you were lucky in that one of your home health aides, Dena, became very close with your mother. So talk about the importance of that relationship.
Oh, my gosh, Dena. Dena showed up, and she was just like this little package of sunshine. And we had other home health aides, and my experience is that these people are absolutely amazing. You know, they're paid not very well at all. They get sort of a minimal amount of training, and many of them then go on and take additional courses in order to gain other skills. But they typically, if they are working with older people, it's because they love older people. Mm-hmm. And so Dena could get my mother to do things that neither my sister and I could get her to do. Most of the time because she would invoke our wrath. But but they just became really good friends. And my mother would say, well, you know, we're going down for coffee and donuts. I don't really care about it, but Dena loves to go. So she also sort of became this great excuse for all kinds of things.
I was very close with my grandmother, and she was a very independent woman. And the same thing, she did not want to feel like she was putting anybody out. And she would get upset when my aunts would take her shopping, because they would take her shopping and then they would stand there and wait for her. And I would go shopping and I'd have my cart. I'd go one way. She'd have her cart and go there. And she just felt more comfortable with it because she didn't feel like she was putting me out, if you will. And I actually enjoyed my outings with her. And I think that's true. You know, we're talking about some of the challenges, but there's a lot of joy in that as well. Working with seniors, they have so much knowledge and so many great stories.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's so much we can learn, which is in a lot of ways, it's a blessing.
We find in hospice, for example, it's the CNAs, the certified nursing assistants who provide the personal care for the patients. Mm-hmm. They tend to get the closest to mm-hmm. the families. Well, it's personal care, so there's that. But they also they tell stories about their own lives, and then people share about their lives. And you know what? When we start to share our personal stories, we're all the same. Yeah. I mean, not all the same, but we all have connections.
Yeah. So it's an interesting change in dynamic. In essence, you become the caregiver / sort of parent to your parent. And so there are obviously challenges and obviously joys in this. What's your takeaway from your experience of that with you and your sister, with your mom?
You know, my major takeaway from this is that you got to give yourself a break. You want to do a good job. I mean, again, I've never been a parent to a child, but I think parents often beat themselves up because they think, oh, I didn't do this right or that right or what. And that's what happens when you're caring for your parent as well. You're always uncertain. You're never sure that you're doing the right thing. There's a lot of confusion. There's all this emotion sort of around it as well. And so I think the main thing that I took away from it, I went into this thinking I was prepared. Mm. I'd been working in the hospice industry for, I don't know, 10 years or something. I really did understand end-of-life care. But again, I wasn't at end-of-life care. I was caring for someone on the tightrope of aging, mm-hmm. which is a very different thing. And so what I found out were really the limits of my knowledge and the fact that I had to figure it out as I went along. So while I encourage everybody, reach out to the Area Agency on Aging, use professionals when you can, have conversations as early as possible so that this doesn't sneak up, you know, mm-hmm. behind you. And then remember that as you're going through it, it's going to be difficult. Mm-hmm. It's going to be confusing. And you're going to feel uncertain and, you know, sort of like you're on quicksand yeah. while it's going on. And that's okay.
Yeah. You just mentioned something that I think is really important, and that is the early conversations, to have the conversations before it, you know, it becomes the end of life, if you will. But, you know, what is it you want? I mentioned I have an aunt and uncle. My aunt has passed away, but they were both in their late 80s when I said they don't have any children. And I said, you know, well, you know, what do you want when you die? I mean, do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be? And my aunt said, well, you know, I don't know. We've never talked about it. I was like, wait a minute, you and your husband and your late ladies, you've never talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that never even crossed her mind until I said that. And you know, if you wait, you don't know, you know, what they, you know, what their wishes would have been.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there's a wonderful, there's been wonderful progress really in getting people to think about the end of life. There's the Conversation Project. You can Google that. Lots of movement around advanced care planning and getting all of your documents in place. And that those are terribly important conversations. But there are equally important conversations about this other pre-period, mm-hmm. this tightrope period. Is it most important to you to stay in your own home? Are you willing to think about moving near one of the children? When might you want to do that? What if you had a fall? What if you couldn't drive anymore? And you want to have those conversations when they are what if mm-hmm. conversations. So, you know, birthdays, the birth of a grandchild, holidays, these are, I know they're happy, happy times and you don't want to talk about the end, but if there's one message I want to put out to people, this is going to sound crazy because it's so obvious. Aging only goes in one direction. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets younger.
Right.
Everybody gets older. And it's something we don't like to think about, but thinking about it makes it much more manageable and even enjoyable. It's when you come up against something that you hadn't thought about or prepared for that it's difficult for everybody.
We will have a link with more information about the book, Holding the Net, Caring for My Mother on the Tightrope of Aging. Melanie Merriman, thanks so much for joining us and bringing us all this very, very helpful information.
Thank you, Mindy. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.